conversation with Louis Buerta, Senior Associate specializing in tax and exchange control, with Cliff Dekker-Hofmeyer. Hello, Louis. Welcome to the show. What a prestigious name you have.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
My very first airport.
Your very first airport, you say? Okay, no.
Yes.
I can't say that any of the places are named after me, though. So.
No, fair enough.
All my predecessors, yeah.
Okay. But in as much as I'm not taking off from that airport, what we do tend to do is we have access to foreign exchange on a regular basis. Now, I like to think, and I think many of the administration heads of the Reserve Bank and Treasury like to tell us that we have got far, far looser foreign exchange control conditions in South Africa at this particular time as compared to, say, 15 or 20 years ago. And yet it seems a little bit nebulous as to how one can trade. I'll kick off with an anecdote. I had an Uber driver in Johannesburg one day who had a gentleman tip him in the Mauritian currency that he happens to have in his pocket when he dropped him off at OR Tambo. And he turned to me and he said, "You said you're in finance. What am I supposed to do with this money?" And actually, it's difficult for us to trade in foreign exchange in South Africa these days.
Yeah. The thing is, you know, there are still specific rules that one has to comply with in respect of holding foreign currency and so on, especially if you're an individual like you and I, you know, where there is a general obligation on us to the terminology is to offer for sale that foreign currency to an authorized dealer, such as a bank or one of your authorized dealers with limited authority, such as your, typically your foreign exchange traders at your airports and so on. So it is, for individuals like you and I, it's still quite limited in terms of what we can do with it.
Okay, so what are the rules that I need to be cognizant of? For example, if I come back from holiday and I have a little bit of spare change in a currency from the country that I was visiting.
Okay. So strictly speaking, the rule is that you have 30 days from when you returned from your travels abroad to exchange that foreign currency into local currency. So strictly speaking, what you have to do is you'd have to go take the money, go to whichever authorized dealer, not necessarily the one from which you purchased the foreign currency, and you'd have to say, okay, I want to exchange this back into rand. That is strictly speaking what one has to do. And then there is an exception for business travelers where if they are going to travel again within 60 days from their return. So if I went to the US and I come back, and in 60 days I'm going to go back to the UK or Europe or whatever, then I can retain the foreign currency and I don't have to exchange it again. But if you don't fall within the business travel exception, then one has to, strictly speaking, offer the foreign currency for sale.
Right. And what are the tax implications? I know that there is obviously a great deal of identification you need to put forward. You need to give your travel details. You need to give your passport details. What actually goes all the way to the Reserve Bank? And does any of that end up with SARS?
Well, so practically speaking, essentially, when you're traveling abroad, what you generally be making use of is your so-called, you might have heard of, colloquially people talk of your 1 million rand annual allowance. The formal term is the so-called single discretionary allowance. So you can, for travel purposes or for any legal purpose, you can take up to 1 million rand abroad. So when you do that, you would go to the foreign exchange trader, the bank, or whatever the case may be, and you'd give them certain information. And what they would have to do, they have an obligation to report the transaction to the Reserve Bank. So they would say, okay, Louis or Rafilwe is taking X amount out of the country, and they're reported under a certain code. So that information is typically not shared with SARS. It's just reported to the Reserve Bank because they use it to keep track of whether you don't transfer in excess of your limit abroad. So there's not the SARS component doesn't really come into that.
Okay.
It's more to see whether you exceed your 1 million rand allowance.
Now, what do we do about neighboring countries in the SADC region that happen to use the US dollar from time to time? Let's say, for example, Zimbabwe. You know, we've got a very big population of Zimbabweans here. Many have to go home, send money home. And as much as they've gone back to the Zim dollar, there was a time that legal tender was US dollar. And they would have to, the fungibility tends to lean back toward the US dollar, regardless of what they call the official legal tender.
Well, see, the thing is, an interesting thing with if you look in SADC and so on is that some SADC countries, or from an exchange control perspective, some SADC countries fall under what is known as the so-called common monetary area. So South Africa, Lesotho, Swaziland, and Namibia all form part of this common monetary area. So our rules are sort of similar. So it's relatively simple if you travel between those countries to use the rand. So, for example, I think the rand is linked to the, for example, the Lesotho currency,
Namibian,
and so on. Yeah, but yes. Zimbabwe, it's a different story. So they are subject to their own separate exchange control rules. So in terms of the use of dollar in legal tender and so on, that ultimately is a decision of the Zimbabwean central bank and their authorities as to whether what they accept legal tender or not.
Okay, all right. Well, that's actually very helpful for us. And from a business running perspective, can you just give us a little bit of a sense of, many people like to incorporate their companies in Mauritius, for example. It gives them some access to offshore cash and a little bit of a safety net. Are there limitations there?
A person, you're allowed to incorporate an offshore company in Mauritius. So South Africa has, and it's an interesting time actually now with this. So there was for a long time, actually it's going to be the case up until for the next few months or so, there's a rule that says, well, you can set up an offshore company, you can hold interest in shares in an offshore company, but there's a limit. You cannot reinvest through that offshore company into South Africa or the common monetary area, so-called restriction on so-called loop structures, as they call them, because essentially the money's flowing in a circle and people would have typically used it to extract capital unlawfully and there was a risk of tax avoidance and so on. So there's actually a process now ongoing whereby this loop structure is also going to be relaxed further and they're changing the tax laws in this regard. So at this stage, the rule is that you can set up the offshore company and you're allowed to hold up to 40%, you along with other South Africans, residents, in that offshore company. You must make use of your allowances and so on. If you're an individual, you've got certain allowances. If you're a company, you also have a 1 billion rand allowance, which you can apply for without Reserve Bank approval. There are also certain requirements to be met, but there is currently still this loop structure restriction, but it is anticipated that in the coming months that will be taken away. So then you would be able to hold shares in the offshore company and be above the 40% threshold potentially. It remains to be seen, but then it reinvests back into South Africa.
A last question from one of our listeners asking whether or not unspent holiday money can be retained in a bank account overseas.
So yes, it can. The rule is for foreign exchanges that you have to use it for the purpose for which you acquired it. So, for example, if I went and I obtained US dollars to the value of 100,000 rand and I traveled to the US and I only spent 50,000 rand of it, I can retain, I can leave the 50,000 rand there, but if I want to use it for something other than travel purposes, then I would have to approach the bank where I exchanged it and ask them to say, inquire with them to say, well, I want you now to use it for a different purpose, because then they would need to change the purpose for which it is. Then they would have to change the reporting code for the remaining month. And this is something that can be done. We've done it before, and it's something that shouldn't be too difficult to do. But one has to inform the bank that you're changing the purpose for which you are using the residual.
Fantastic. Fascinating stuff. Louis Boots, a senior associate specializing in tax and exchange control for Cliff Dekker Hofmeyr. I think it's safe to say one needs to contact that kind of a professional at any time that you want to make any moves with your Forex. It's time for us to head over to our local travel, though, with Zane Johnson.